Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 650 for comics originally released on January 22nd, 2020. Now, starting us off in DC is Wonder Woman 750.
And what a book it is. Quite large.
Yes, this thing is 96 pages. Interesting they went for a 96-page thing instead of saying it's 100-page and counting the covers as they usually do.
I would agree.
I'm not thinking this is some sudden truth in advertising shtick or something. I don't know what it is. Really, 4 pages at this point doesn't matter.
Exactly.
This took a little while to get through.
Yeah, it was a lot of material. It was definitely a bit.
They had, 9 or 10 stories maybe? I didn't actually count how many stories. There's quite a few.
Yeah, quite a few. I would go with 9. Yeah, probably 9 because I think they allocated, it might have been even 8 because it seemed like most of the stories were about 12 pages long, roughly.
Thereabouts.
96, I'm thinking like 8, 12, maybe.
They list 9 on that first kind of credits page or whatever.
Oh, maybe I'm... Okay, that works.
I've scribbled a couple of notes down on each story. I figure we'll just kind of go through them and then kind of overall thoughts on this thing.
Yeah, that works.
The first one was the Wild Hunt finale. This was finishing off the storyline that had been going on in the title, so I thought that was a nice, thing to do.
Yeah.
And, I've had mixed feelings on the current run of the title. It's not horrible. It's not great. There was one or two things here and there that just a turn of phrase or whatever that I'm like, what does that even mean?
Like, what do you mean?
Early on when Wonder Woman is saying, when the game is red and the stakes are never higher. When the game is red, I have never heard that phrase before.
That's true. I've never heard that either.
Does that mean it's like a they're out for blood or something like that?
Possibly. Who knows?
It's not a problem. It's just the sort of thing that it's like, okay, that's a little weird.
Yeah, when the game is red. I don't know.
And then I've never really gone back to figure out when did they start referring to the magic lasso as the golden perfect?
I don't know when, but that was kind of weird. I thought so too. The golden perfect. That was one thing that I found very bizarre.
It's not brand new, but it's not, ancient either. You know what I mean?
But it sounds kind of ridiculous too. I just don't like that phrase, the golden perfect.
I just don't understand that phrase.
Exactly. It's very weird.
Don't understand it. Kind of hard to like. It was a nice-ish splash page. There was one or two things on the splash page if I were to nitpick the arcs. Don't know. I liked the fact that they started out with a story that kind of wrapped up what had been going on in the title so far.
Yes, I would agree.
Up until we get to that last page of this story.
Yeah, the last page I was like, I kind of felt like, underwhelmed?
Yeah, because it's basically 2 panels and most of a splash or whatever, and it was a cheap tease for the next story.
Yeah, very cheap. You don't know really what's going on. It's just like, oh, here's the next thing. Now, me, I'm thinking like, if I pick this up, a lot of people pick up big issues. A lot of people pick up number ones. A lot of people pick up, like Amazing Spider-Man 800 or Action 1000. So people are going to pick up this thing thinking it's a collector's type thing. And if you haven't been reading Wonder Woman, it's kind of weird walking into part 6 and now you leave with not knowing what's going on next.
That's a damned if they do, damned if they don't, because if they don't really have it tied to what's going on in the title, it feels disconnected.
Yep.
But if they do, you've got the exact problem you're talking about of new readers are going to be like, what the hell's going on?
Yeah, if I pick this up, if I was a new reader, I'd be like, oh, I got part 6 of a 6-part story, which is cool. It's almost like it would have been a little bit better if they start off with like issue 1 of this next arc where whatever this thing is happening, maybe that's cool. I have no idea. We just don't know. Just start with that. And here's the new jumping on point.
The other thing they could have done was have just finished up an arc, use this as a repositioning issue, where because of whatever has happened before, she's reexamining her life, her mission, her everything.
That would have been well planned, and that would have been a better use of the pages, I think, for this finishing up story here.
And it really could have caused her to go back and
well, back when I was, you know, the ambassador from Themyscira, or when I first came to Man's World, or, you know, examine the different periods of her life, what they mean to her then and what they mean to her now in light of whatever.
Yeah, I agree. That would have been really cool. One thing that I did not like about this issue, and several of the issues in here, or stories in this thing, is, you have this big bad. I do like that they have, the character that pops up, trying to think of the name right now, from the Silencer. So I did like seeing the Silencer in here. But I don't like that, you know, it seems like during all the fight scenes now, unless it's a monster, she doesn't fight anyone. She doesn't do anything. It's more about, oh, you know, let's save this person. Let's save this. I mean, I'm reading comics, so I expect some action in it. And it seems like Wonder Woman's been steering away from that, unless it's like in the monster realm for me.
They have this weird pacifist warrior take on her at times.
Yeah, and I don't like that. It's kind of, you know, and I feel that's disconnected from the DCU Wonder Woman, because there you see a warrior woman who fights and stabs, you know, whether it's Nazis or it's, you know, big creatures. And here you almost have her almost in every story. Let's hug it out. And I'm like, it's just bizarre. It's against the warrior code of the Amazonians. It seems like it's almost against who the character is in my viewpoint, but, you know, I'm not a long time reader. It's just very odd.
There are times where the take on Wonder Woman almost seems like it's Xena, warrior princess, and other times it's the peace-loving ambassador. Let's, like you said, talk it out, hug it out, whatever.
Yeah, so we're getting the ambassador here. And which way? Do you have a preference? I don't know.
I see both sides, and I've enjoyed both aspects. There's a point where I think she should start with, you know, trying to bring peace and negotiate and whatnot, but there needs to be that clear understanding. If that goes not well, she'll, you know, start fighting or whatever.
Yeah, almost like I have the same issue with Wonder Man over in Marvel, which we don't see him very often, but, you know, where he's like a pacifist, which is fine. It's just, it doesn't make for a good comic when, you know, someone's there ready to slug you in the face and you're just gonna be like, please give it to me, you know, or let's talk this out. And I'm like, and she's an Amazonian warrior trained to fight and with martial skills. It's like, I understand it, but to me, it just seems odd.
I think it works a little better with Wonder Man for the pacifist route, because he can really take the damage and stuff. And not that Wonder Woman can't, but she's walking around with a sword these days.
Yeah, a sword. It's like, come on.
When I think pacifist, sword wielding is not something that goes along with that in my mind.
Yeah. I'm a sword and shield wearing pacifist with what are those things called on her arms? Whatever those are.
The gauntlets, the bracelets,
gauntlets,
whatever.
Yeah, I don't know what they are. And then also with a lasso. Or the golden, what they call it? The golden, what was it?
The golden perfect.
Yeah, the golden perfect.
Yeah, I
enjoyed it, but it was just kind of, that's the thing that was odd to me. It's happened quite a bit recently.
It is, yeah, but they've at least addressed that a little of she needs to rethink her mission.
I agree. I would agree with you there.
I don't know that they're going to.
We shall see.
But we shall see.
Yes.
Now, that next story where they have, what was her name?
Oh, the little girl.
Star Blossom.
Yeah.
At first, I'm thinking, should I recognize her? Should I know her? She looked just enough like Moon Girl over at Marvel.
That's what I thought. I was like, wow, did they get together and do a mashup and have Moon Girl in here? And I'm like, no, it's Star Blossom.
If she has shown up before, it would have been nice to have had a little footnote telling us when and where.
Yeah, I have no idea who this is.
It was a nice character-based story. It's a character I wouldn't mind seeing again. I think she interacted well with Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
The whole talk of, you know, hey, we've heard of the Titans. I don't know if they're a right match for this kid or not, you know, with the talk of how much tragedy follows the Titans. Wait until DDO is no longer at DC, and then it might be safe for her to join the Titans. I'm just saying.
Exactly. Right now, she'll be a casualty.
This was a nice, you know, character-based story. Not a whole lot of meat, action, adventure, whatever you want to say there. It was fine.
Yeah, it was fine. A little touchy-feely, and yeah, nice little, I guess, introduction of the character, because I've never seen her before.
Again, I may have seen her before. I have this feeling that I probably have, I just don't remember.
Yeah.
But not really the kind of character that would stick out in my mind.
Yeah, not someone that I'm going to go out of my way to read.
Yeah. what did you think of the interrogation?
Okay, my note on it was, I thought it was kind of odd and not very good, this story. I it was just kind of bizarre.
I had similar thoughts, but the word that comes to my mind is flawed.
Flawed, yes. It was very flawed. It was just like, it's an interrogation, and then what happens in there, it didn't make a lot of sense with how it played out.
I didn't care for who the interrogator turned out to be.
Me neither.
It seemed out of character, and they treated that character like a run-of-the-mill character of that type.
I would agree. It's something you wouldn't expect to see that character doing or behaving in that way.
This felt like something that would have worked better, maybe, if it had not been a Wonder Woman story, but if it had been, say, a Thor story over at Marvel.
Yeah, without, you know, I'm not going to mention who the character is in here, but I almost felt the character was behaving almost like a Loki aspect.
Yeah.
And that's what I kept thinking. I'm like, it's just so not what I would expect, and this is not how that should be. So it's just like, I didn't care for it because of that.
Yeah, and there was an aspect where things take a twist there, and it ends in a different place than it started or whatever, and I'm like, what the hell happened there?
That's exactly what I was wondering. I was like, okay, here's something happening, and then boom, how did that happen? It's kind of weird to talk about it without talking about it, but I know exactly what you mean. It's like, I don't know how I ended up that way.
Well, and part of why I don't want to reveal what happened is I'd like somebody else to have a chance to read it if they haven't already with an open mind, not knowing, you know, kind of what happens or whatever, and let them judge for themselves.
Exactly.
For me, though, it made no sense. It was indicative of these writers don't understand these characters.
Yep.
And it was a low point of the issue.
I would agree. And I was kind of surprised because I think that was that Gail Simone? No, it's Mariko Tamaki. And I think she did something like an all ages book with it, with Wonder Woman or something. But yeah, she I felt like she didn't understand the character.
Yeah, I was disappointed.
Me too.
The next story was, I don't know, this was, the story I think title was Never Change. It deals with Cersei and stuff. And it was a good story. I'm not sure it worked as well as it could have, having been so soon after the lead story of this issue.
Exactly. And it started, the very first page when you get there, it says, this story takes place later. And based on it being almost so tied to that other story, I'm like, is this a play that, like, it played out exactly again? I'm like, it's just so weird.
Well, and it takes place later is kind of vague.
Very vague. I'm like, later when? Later after
later
the first
today?
Story? Exactly. So I took it as maybe later after the first story. And then the way that played out with the Golden Perfect, I was just like, that's bizarre.
That didn't make any sense to me, because that deal that was made is not one that I think would have been made.
Yes, and the thing that really upset me with the story is when you get to the flip of the page and you're at the very end, and it's like, okay, it played out really bizarrely, it doesn't make any sense, Greg Rucka. I was like,
yes.
What?
It was well written and well drawn, because Greg Rucka and Nicholas Scott, great creative team. They've worked on Wonder Woman before. He's done a couple of runs on Wonder Woman.
Yes.
This, I think, the positioning of this in this issue didn't help it.
Yeah, I would agree.
And I don't think that if the events had turned out the way kind of they were expected to, the story would have worked even worse for me.
Yeah.
You know, I was frustrated by this one.
And me too. This was the point at this story, the previous little story and this story, I started getting really frustrated with the book.
This was a good execution of a questionable story.
Yeah, that's the weird part, is because it's written well. It's just the script. I don't like the script. It's written well. It's drawn beautifully. It's a decent enough story. It's just things in there. I'm just like, man, this is just odd. And I don't know if that comes down to, I don't blame it on the writer. I'm like, why'd the editor let this happen?
I blame it a little on the writer. I think Rucka is responsible for some of this. To me, it's more at a plot level than even a script level.
Yeah, plot. That's true. Yeah.
You know, there was a key plot point that I don't buy.
Me neither. So we were in agreement on this story. So it's very odd, but we agree.
So, I don't know. So far, it had been a little hit or miss in some of this. We get
That's
to
what
the,
I am.
the next issue of To Leave Paradise, which is a flashback to kind of just before Diana leaves the island.
Yep.
Phil Hester art, so different style than some of the other stuff. Not bad, but yeah. Different.
Completely different, yeah.
And it was an okay story, not bad, not brilliant.
Yep, I would agree.
You know, it was one of those that I don't feel like I gained a whole lot reading it, and I wouldn't have missed a whole lot if I hadn't read it, but it was fine.
Yeah, it felt like a little bit of a placeholder or a filler, and that wasn't meant to be mean. It just, they could have left it out, and I wouldn't have noticed, and I wouldn't have felt like I missed anything.
Yeah, to me, this is the sort of thing that would have played well as a prelude or a prologue to a retelling of the origin.
Yeah, and I think the writer on this one was Cami Garcia, and I can't remember. I think she's another one of those young adult or all-age writers that they've been doing at DC with the young titles, and so maybe this is something to do with her all-age little graphic novel. I don't know.
Could be. Don't know, and therefore kind of don't care.
Me too.
The next one of Emergency Visit, really the art on this didn't work for me.
It was atrocious. It was bizarre. The proportions of people, it felt like I drew the comic and I can't draw. And I was like, wow. And it's so bizarre because it's so different from the rest of the book. I was just like, the art took me out of the story.
Yeah, it was stylized, kind of cartoony, exaggerated in places, and intentionally so. I didn't care for it. And then there was aspects of some of the characterizations, particularly later in the story, that was so over the top.
I would agree. It was so over the top. And then this is where, like, kind of right here, the book, I'm like, okay, this thing's off the rails. Can we pull it back? Can we get it back on the rails?
This was one of the other low points for me. Yeah.
I was just like, oh no, this is down in the D rankings at this story.
Then we get to the To Me story, and I did not expect to see the bombshells in this issue.
Me neither, and I've never read the bombshells, so it was kind of nice to have this piece in there just for me and get, you know, some background on the characters, because it was almost like an intro to all the characters for me.
It was. Marguerite Bennett did a story in basically kind of how did that Wonder Woman impact the other characters of that universe.
Yeah, and I found this, for me, being it was fun. The art was really beautiful in here,
mm-hmm.
And it really got back on the rails at this point, because at that point, you know, before the story, I was like, man, this is just really bombing for me.
I liked it because, you know, having read the bombshell stuff, it was a nice reminder of, oh yeah, these characters did exist. They could have done a little bit better to make it, I think, a little more accessible and like maybe even name all the other characters we see, because we get many, but not all. But it was fun. It was good.
Yeah, I agree. It definitely was a pickup from the previous story.
Yes, yes. And then Always, where we get the story at the Argus inpatient recovery facility.
Yeah.
This was a decent story around Vanessa Capitellis or whatever. I forget. I don't know how to pronounce her name, actually. Who was the Silver Swan.
Yeah.
And I think all of that happened during the George Perez run of Wonder Woman, but I could be wrong on that.
Yeah.
And we haven't seen this character in a while, and I think the last time we'd seen her as Silver Swan, we hadn't seen that character in a while and stuff. And that's kind of the crux of this character, of brush with greatness with Wonder Woman, you know, suffers and is feels abandoned by Wonder Woman and the ramifications of that.
Yeah. So I felt like this one was good, mm-hmm. And it treated her a little bit more like a warrior in here. But once again, at the end, we have the hug it out moment, but I didn't know the background of the character, so this was my first reading of The Silver Swan, because I've only been reading Wonder Woman since Rebirth, and we haven't seen the character in there. So I enjoyed it, but I was, once again, I was wondering, I was like, man, why does everything end in a hug it out moment? That was just me going, this is weird.
I'm trying to think back to when she was a regular in the comic, and I think it was early in the George Perez run, where I think her mother was the one who had kind of taken in Wonder Woman, knew ancient Greek, so that was somebody Wonder Woman could actually talk to as she was learning English and things like that. And Vanessa was just there through all of that as a young child.
Yeah, but I did like this, and I would read something like this. I think it would be good. I just, not having that background, I was just wondering why it twisted there, you know, from the action to the more peaceful warrior, I guess we should say. And this was that guy, Vita Ayala, who yeah. I've been enjoying.
I think they could have done a better job setting the backstory of Vanessa's relationship with Wonder Woman.
Yeah, and you probably know it. other readers probably know it, but newer reader, I'm going to be like, who is this? But kind of
cool. I fall into the category of I knew it. It's a question of can I remember it?
That's me half the time.
And then, to me, we got what I thought was potentially going to be one of the more talked about stories out of this issue in the long run. And that's A Brave New World, which is by Scott Snyder and Brian Hitch. And this is the story of Wonder Woman being the first public hero back in 1939.
Yeah, and to me, this was the best story in the book.
It was well done. It was a lot of fun. It was good art, good story. I'm not going to say I'm crazy about the idea of Wonder Woman being the first public superhero in 1939, but to me, the big question is, did this just kick off 5G?
Oh, maybe. Huh. Because we have... interesting. I didn't think about it that way. Because I was questioning, you know, the first hero and stuff like that, and I liked the writer, and it was the most, I would say, fun read of the book. I really enjoyed it. And like you said, this could be a kickoff for 5G. And yep. Didn't they mention that would happen in these big anniversary-type issues?
That I'm not sure about.
I think I heard rumors about that. I don't know. Somewhere. Who knows? Somewhere on the Slack or someone. I don't know. I maybe this is... I didn't even think about that. Huh.
I think it is. And if you look at that last panel...
Yeah.
There's another cameo in there.
Oh, yeah. So, I am more excited than ever because this was my favorite story. Now it's really my favorite story because maybe it has a bigger impact than what I thought.
This could be the first aspects of the reshaping of the DC Universe to come.
Wow. All right. Well, now I'm a little more on board with that last because I thought it was really cool, but I'm like, oh, well, that's it. We're not going to see this anywhere else. But I wondered why they had that last panel in there. Like, this must tie into something. I don't think Scott Snyder's taken over Wonder Woman. Why is that even there? Aha. Thank you for helping me with that. You connected the dots.
Yeah, I mean, they'd been talking about setting her up as the original superhero.
And here they are doing it.
And yeah, that's the exact story we get here.
That makes this book a little bit more important than what I thought. And it almost saves the book for me because some of it was like, okay, and there was a few boring parts, and there were some good parts, but I was going towards like a really mediocre grade because I'm like, I don't know, but that means it has more impact. And now that I read that, I'm like, okay, I'm on board.
Okay, now let me ask this one question.
All right.
If she originally went public in 1939.
Yes.
Don't you think that throws the rest of her storylines that we've read kind of into question as not having happened the way they had originally seen print, since she hadn't been around for, what, 80 years? And therefore, what does that do to the continuity and other aspects of most of the other stories in this issue?
It means it's completely different. I mean, this is kind of, if this is the direction they're going with this, and like I said, I don't know how far-reaching this is going to be. I don't know if this is going to be spun off into a pocket thing, but my understanding is this won't be spun off into a pocket. That redoes everything in the DCU.
Yes.
If that's what they're going to... And basically, it's a reboot, almost, of the continuity.
Well, it's a question of if it's a reboot or a retcon.
A retcon. A major retcon, I would say.
And just for clarification for listeners, the way I tend to use the terminology is a reboot is, hey, you just basically ixnayed everything and you're starting from scratch. It's like literally rebooting your computer. There is no nothing left in RAM at all.
Yeah.
Whereas a retooling in this case is you're still kind of running with things as they are, but you're saying what we thought we knew is wrong and it was really this.
And that's exactly what they did here. So this is a major retcon, and if this is what they're going with, it kicks off in a big way and changes everything we know.
And it should change her as a character, because even, oh, Amazons are immortal, whatever, so maybe 80 years isn't that long for her. She's still seen everyone she's first encountered grow old and die, and their newborns grow old and die.
Yeah.
So what does this do to Steve Trevor? What's this do to a lot of other kind of regular characters and stuff like that? Don't know yet.
Yeah, that's the thing. We don't know. But it kind of gets me excited a little bit that this is something that we're going to revisit, because it is the best written story in here. Even though Greg Rucka wrote his story very well, there's some things that just – it shouldn't have been there, so it was off for me. And this was the story out of this issue that I liked the most.
Yeah.
And so now I'm happy that it's going to have a bigger ramification on the DCU.
Well, I'm not certain that it will, but I strongly suspect that it will.
Fingers are crossed. And I actually, you pointed that out to me. And that was the thing I was going to question you about that last panel. I was like, okay, if this is just a one-off, ta-da, here we go, 1939, first character, why is that last panel there? That makes no sense.
I would expect, based on what we've seen here, that there will be a story in Flash, I guess 750 or whatever it is, starring Jay Garrick back in the in 39.
Yep.
39, 40, whatever.
And to make it a very expensive proposition for our listeners out there and for you and I, it almost makes it a necessity to read these big anniversary issues that are $10 a pop.
I think if they're smart, once they've gotten enough of these kinds of backstory things done, they will do a 100-page giant collecting them or something like that. Or maybe that's what they're going to do as part of their Free Comic Book Day special.
That could be like the gold book, and it's kind of like kicking off the whole darn thing when they collect and compile all those stories into a big chunk, you know, maybe four or five characters, boom.
Number of ways they could go on this.
Yeah, and I would be interested in it. And this did not offend me. I did see it was a repositioning or a retconning here, and it was written very well. Whether Scott Snyder does this or not, who knows? But, you know, Brian Hitch won't be doing the art for very long. He tends to not be able to keep up with the issues. But this was done very well, and it was interesting and entertaining.
But if they use Snyder and Hitch to do these kind of one-off start stories for these characters and stuff for 5G... In these anniversary specials or whatever, I mean, that would be cool.
That'd be really cool, and it makes it fun. And like we've talked about multiple times, when Scott Snyder was in Justice League, I guess he's still on there, but he's coming off. He's kind of the idea guy at DC. I see him as the big picture, big idea guy. He comes out with these cool things, and that's definitely who you want to tap on the shoulder for the 5G kickoff.
If they're using him as kind of one of the chief architects for the 5G stuff, they really should have been mentioning that.
I would agree. I really should. I would agree with you there. But what's weird is it came out and there's no mention of it. But you saying that, I'm like, yeah, that's it. It's got to be.
That's certainly what I suspect.
Cool.
So overall, I thought this was a good issue. Covered a lot of ground. Was a meaty read. A lot of stuff going on. The question I had...
Okay.
Is how did they manage to do this sort of a milestone issue of Wonder Woman without even like a pinup or something from George Perez?
Yeah, nothing. Nothing in here. I don't know why.
Okay, sure. He's retired or whatever. Yeah. But he has had such a major influence on this character that a cover gallery of his work or something.
A reprint of something.
Exactly.
It would have been well warranted. And actually, even though he's retired, I know he is doing a cover for something. It was recently, I think Jason from Hawaii was talking on the Slack channel about that.
I think, you know, having an excuse of just doing a, you know, here's what Wonder Woman looked like throughout the decades or something like that.
Yeah, there was none of that little celebration. This was more just the short stories and the kickoff of 5G. There was no cover gallery, no cool little whatever, but it wasn't bad.
Imagine how cool it would have been after that last story to have had a two-page splash done by various artists where you see Wonder Woman in the 1940s, then the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, the 2000s, 2010s, and now into the 2020s.
Just seeing the costume changes and the design changes, it would have been really awesome.
Yeah, and that would have been a great place to have, you know, well, here's the George Perez one from the 80s if you wanted to or what have you.
Exactly. That would have been super cool.
They should have at least name-dropped him or something like that or done a thing at the end of, hey, we'd like to thank all the creators who've worked on Wonder Woman and just, you know, here's the stretches that people have done for long runs or I don't know, something.
Something. It would have been really cool. But yeah, so that was a miss on here because it did lack that little celebratory thing on there.
Overall, I thought this was good. Had some high points, had some not so high points. $9.99, so not cheap, but I felt we got our money's worth. I'm going to go with a B+ on this. I felt it could have been a little bit stronger of an anniversary issue. And overall, I liked it, but I wasn't just, oh my God, it was brilliant.
No. And actually, you... finding that 5G thing, it picked it up. It had the score went up a tiny bit for me. I was, believe it or not, down in C+ category, but I'm giving it the B- because that got me excited, because there was only two stories that I really felt like I really enjoyed. That was, I thought Gregorica wrote his well, but it was kind of weird. I really enjoyed Scott Snyder's at the end, and it was kind of like a nice little cap for the first issue because I've been reading it. But overall, there was a lot of low points in there. But for the 5G stuff, I'm going to go ahead and give it the B-. And I'm with you that I think they're going to probably do some type of a recap or collection of all of these stories. So if people don't want to read this, they can probably get that story later on in a collection. But when that comes out, if it comes out, I just don't know.
Yeah, we'll see. And for all I know, this doesn't play into 5G. I would just be shocked. Given those rumors, what they've said, seeing this, it has to.
It explains the last panel, too, because that left me confused. I was like, why does this one little story have this thing at the end, this little teaser? And I was like, huh, you mentioned that. I was like, son of a gun, I forgot.
Yeah. Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yeah, let's do that.
This is Atlantis Attacks number 1. Now, I read Agents of Atlas, that miniseries, and was rather annoyed how it just kind of stopped without ending the story.
Yes.
So when you said, hey, John, let's read Atlantis Attacks, I'm like, well, geez, you know, I'm curious. Okay, I'll give it a shot, but I'm not happy.
Yeah, I remember.
And it was nice that they gave a recap of the Portal City of Pan. I mean, I knew all that from Agents of Atlas, but this isn't that miniseries, so resetting the scene, smart. Mm-hmm. This seemed to pick up a little bit of a different place than where Agents of Atlas left off.
Yes.
And, you know, it's just one of those things that between the Pan gates and the Krakoa gates, I'm just thinking airline travel's way down in the Marvel Universe these days.
Yes, it is. I literally had that in my notes. I'm like, you know, the Pan gates, the Krakoa gates, it's like, they're like, hey, here's this cool concept. And somebody heard the other one say it, and they're like, I'm doing that too.
They're at least different enough takes that I'm not upset about it. I just do think it's funny both are going on at the same time.
Yeah, it's funny. It's hilarious. But yeah, I put that in there. I'm like, in my notes, I'm like, yeah, son of a gun, so similar. But yeah, that's kind of cool. And I thought it was kind of an interesting take about the water and how that interaction with the Pan Gate worked.
I thought that was hilarious, particularly way the explanation was given. It's like, of course.
I know. I was laughing. I was like, okay.
That makes the tech even more impressive, but they've already explained the tech and how it could do crazy things, so I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
When they mention how it was all tied into Atlantis, I'm like, that's odd, because I've read a lot about Atlantis, and I hadn't made that connection and felt it was a little convenient.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. Very convenient, and now we see why the thing that was powering Pan way back in the Agents of Atlas, now we see why that's playing a big part with this interaction between the two societies.
Yeah.
But I was surprised because I've never seen those things in over there before with Namor and the Atlanteans. I've never seen that.
That's exactly what I was thinking. It's like, I really, you know, you'd think if Namor had this, I mean, he'd take advantage of that a little more often or whatnot. But, you know, hey, whatever.
I know, these are not what we expected. They're not creatures of the deep. So I was just like, that's so bizarre because I've read a lot of it and I'm like, I've never seen it. So where did this come from? Retcon.
Convenience plot device.
Convenient plot device. There you go.
Now, I want to talk about three scenes here, three panels actually, two of which are splashes, one of which are not.
Okay.
Where we get kind of the big introduction of some of the major characters of this arc.
Okay.
In that first page when we get to Atlantis, that
okay.
last panel in the bottom right corner,
all right.
when we get the reveal of Namor's face,
mm-hmm.
I'm like, I get it's underwater, but dude, don't they have light down here?
Yeah, you would think.
I mean, the thing is completely in shadow.
That's kind of funny. It's just, yeah.
I'm surprised people aren't up in arms that this is like some kind of a blackface kind of a thing. Cause, I mean,
I was getting ready to say, I was like, you can make a very politically incorrect joke about this. It looks like it.
I was disappointed with the art on that page.
Yeah, that was pretty horrible.
But then, a couple of pages later, we get the splash of the new Agents of Atlas and stuff like that. And it's like, that was a good intro.
Yes.
That was cool. And then a few pages later, there at the end, we get another splash page of the classic Agents of Atlas. I'm like, that's kind of cool.
Yes.
You know, so there were some moments where I thought the art was really good. There are a couple, not so much.
Yeah, it did go back and forth, and probably that Namor face was the worst thing in here. But yeah, the other ones were pretty cool. And I did like the way they ended that issue with that introduction there.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that's really something that you enjoyed in the past, so it's kind of cool to see him coming back. Here they are.
Well, and it's set up such that, are they going to be friends or are they going to fight?
Yes.
And I like how they left it to where they could go either way.
Yeah, it's completely open, and we will know, so now you have to read issue number 2, because you want to know, don't you?
If they had gone on this where they're in a fighting pose and all, you know, all set to go tackle the other team or whatever, it's like, oh, okay, cheap ploy to get us to buy the next issue. I felt this was more effective.
Yeah, because you really don't know. They could be coming together to work together. We just don't know. And even the posture with the arms like that. Yeah. Perfect.
Now, I thought this was a decent issue. I'm still unhappy how Agents of Atlas, that miniseries, just stopped abruptly. I'm tempted to get this miniseries, but I'll admit I'm reluctant to, since I don't know if this is going to actually end the story or just spin it off into some other miniseries.
Exactly. That's the weird part. We don't know. And I was so curious how this would hit you, or, you know, how it would affect you, because I remember you were upset when we reviewed issue 5. So here we are. And you see classic characters, you see the characters you were enjoying. It picked right up. It almost feels like it should be issue 6 or 7.
Almost.
I can't remember what we left off with.
It was 5 with that. The problem with this being the next issue of that series is they had to spend so much of this issue resetting the scene because it's a new miniseries.
Exactly.
And I respect Greg Pak for doing that. But having read the previous miniseries, it slowed the story down. It's like, oh, pause, we stopped with this great action thing, and now we've got to kind of reset up to it halfway through.
Yes, very much.
So that was a little frustrating. I enjoyed the issue. I felt the art was uneven, great in places, bad in places. I liked it. I just felt burned enough by where they had kind of stopped and I don't say bait and switch into this, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
I don't know if I'm going to keep going with it or not.
So you're debating. And for me, it was like, I'm with you with the art. The art was better in some places. In some places, it was really rough. And it's the same artist throughout. It's just, I don't know what it is. It's just off on some pages. But I enjoyed it. I remember reading the old Atlantis attacks and the annuals way back in the 80s or 90s. I can't remember when it came out. But I really enjoyed that. I thought that was cool. This is completely different from that. It doesn't, I mean, even though they have the title there, it's completely a different thing. But I like it. I also like the Agents of Atlas. I liked having the City of Pan. I like getting all these Asian Marvel characters together. And some of them, it seemed like they didn't fit. I mean, some of them fit all over, but like Silk, it seemed like she didn't really fit with Spider-Man. You know, they had her, you know, with these hormones, she was crazy madly in love with Peter and he was in love with her. Then that just kind of disappeared and they didn't know what to do with her.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of cool that now she has a place to go because I really liked her. So I like seeing that. You have some of those other manga characters that they've been, you know, toying with over here. White Fox, which is from a video game that they've been doing, which I don't play the video game, so I don't know about it, but I knew that's where it's from. But I like the characters. I like the interaction. Some of it seems completely ridiculous as far as the power source and that stuff with Atlantis, but at the same time, it's ridiculous in a way where I'm enjoying it, and I think I'm going to stay on this for the whole 5 issues or 6 issues or whatever it ends up being.
Okay, good to know.
That's just me, so I'm going to read it.
I might. I'm not sure.
I know exactly what you mean, because frustration, time, and stuff like that. So, man, I got digital codes for you.
I'll have to think about it. I may just end up talking to Eric and say, you know, add this and the other stuff to my list. I don't know.
Yeah, you're still debating. So that being said, like, what kind of score would you give this? I mean, going into it, and it wasn't bad. It wasn't great. It was kind of ridiculous, fun, I would say, with some highs and some lows.
I went with a B, but it's a B with some caveats.
Okay.
I really liked, again, those splash pages, the two Agents of Atlas teams and stuff. That was good. Some of the story was good. A lot happened in this. But there are a couple of pages that the artist should have spent a little bit more time and cleaned up.
I would agree with you there. And believe it or not, I went with a B as well. I enjoyed it. And what turned it into a B is kind of like in B minus territory was the last page reveal. I want to see where that's going.
Yeah, and that may be the thing that makes me put this on my my pull list, because there's a couple of these characters that are just kind of cool, and I want to see where they go on with them.
Yeah, that's where I am with it.
But it's one of those things, if I do get on board with this, and at issue 5 it ends only to segue into another miniseries, that You're may done. Really turn me off Greg Pak's writing.
Yeah, they can't keep burning you like that.
Well, they set my expectation of it's going to be a 5-issue and done. So I'm expecting a certain story pacing, and it's not there. And then they kind of really, while they're addressing some of the issues of the Pan City and stuff, that was the crux of the previous miniseries. Now it's just incidental.
Yeah, I agree.
So why build up these storylines only to shift gears like that? It's frustrating.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I understand exactly what you're saying.
So we'll see what they do. Or at least You'll see what they do. I may or may not. I don't know.
I will see.
Shall we move on to our other book?
Yeah, let's do that.
This is Deja Thoris number 2 from Dynamite. Now, I will say flat out, I am not overly familiar with the Deja Thoris character. I'm passingly familiar with her, having read some John Carter of ours stuff before.
Okay.
So while I know a little about her, I didn't know enough to know she had a daughter or a granddaughter. I did read the first issue before reading this, and it did set up the status quo acceptably. I still had a few lingering questions, because again, not a huge reader of the John Carter or Deja Thoris stuff.
Yeah.
The one thing that really hit me with the first issue is that human profanity on Mars just felt kind of strange.
Yeah.
I'm sure they were just translating it for my benefit, which I don't know in that case if I appreciate it or not.
Understand with that.
And I came out of that issue thinking it was an enjoyable story, but not essential reading for me. And going into this, really, my thoughts didn't change a whole lot. It was a good story, not kind of essential reading. And it was weird because anytime I thought they were just about to mention the name John Carter or whatever, they suddenly don't, and very abruptly.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I don't know if something happened with the license there, but they had John Carter stuff in the past. I actually picked up, I don't remember if they were the Dynamite equivalent of the paperback omnibus, you know, to get caught up with all the stuff John Carter from the beginning, and I read some of the Deja Thoris ones. So I actually read all that stuff, so I'm kind of versed in all the stuff that's been going on there. So he, you know, is a human, so he's no longer there, and the Martians live a lot longer, so yeah, you have her aging, you have daughters, granddaughters, things like that. The thing that, there's some things in here which I liked, I've been enjoying it. It's written well, but like you said, it's probably not essential. It's something that if I was really pushed, I would cut it from my list. But it's not written very bad. The part that I didn't like, you go back to John Carter, he wasn't a superhero. He lived on Earth, and because of gravity and stuff like that, and you go to Mars with less gravity, and you basically are much stronger, you can jump really high, you have all these abilities. I don't think his granddaughter who grew up on Mars would have those same abilities.
I think they're going with it being almost like that Kryptonian kind of a thing of you've got the genetics, therefore you have naturally stronger muscles or something like that.
That's what they must. I would think that being away from the, basically the gravity pull of Earth, that they'd almost be weaker over time. But yeah, they become almost like super characters in here. But that was kind of cool. I like seeing the white apes in here too, because they were always a thing that was there with them. John Carter, Warlord of Mars, you had them in there. And the other question I have, which you're not going to have an answer for, I don't know who those characters are at the end.
I had no idea either. And this was the second issue in a row where they end on kind of a looming threat. Not exactly a cliffhanger, close enough. And in this case, yeah, I had no idea who those were at the end, but it's like, they're clearly not friendly.
That's how it was for me, because I read this and I was like, hey, it's kind of cool. A lot of action in here and written well. You know, it's Dan Abnett doing the writing. He usually writes things well, but he ends on a cliffhanger, which even me having read it, I'm like, I really can't remember. I don't know who these characters are. I probably read those omnibus like 2 years ago. I just, were they there? I don't know. Maybe it's some new character. I just don't know why or how or should I care.
They're at least in a threatening enough manner that we don't need to know the specifics to know that they're a problem.
Yeah, they're bad guys just from the dress and garb and the two characters in the background.
Yeah, yeah.
What's happening there? But I do like the family here. I like the, I've always liked it, Deja Thoris, but she's just the girl of, John Carter, mm-hmm. and he has passed, and here she is, and she's kind of lost her being a queen, so she's kind of moved down in ranks of the Martian society.
Well, yeah, the basic story is basically a new regime has taken over a while back, and they're now at the point where they're ready to purge the last of the old regime.
Yeah, and so they've almost been set up in here for a homicide.
Oh yeah, Deja Thoris has to gather the rest of the family somewhere safe and hope to survive.
Yeah, that's kind of like what's going on in this issue. And it's I'm enjoying it. I like it. I've been reading all the stuff there, so I'm on board for it just because I like this. But I can see if you weren't reading this and you don't have a lot of, you know, background in this, this probably wouldn't seal the deal and get you on board.
Yeah, I thought it was a decent read. Not essential reading for me these days, but a while back, it might have made the cut.
Oh. All right. Yeah, and because of the writer, I will tell you, this writer is better than who was writing the Deja Thoris thing before, or The Last Warlord of Mars. They keep changing the title. You know, they'll come out with like 20 issues, and then it changes to another thing, and it's a different artist. So whoever wrote the previous title, this is written better, because Dan Abnett is a better writer.
Yeah, he's doing a good job on this. He's very talented, has been for many a year. What's interesting is going to the page where they've got the indicia. John Carter, Warlord of Mars, is listed there as something they have to, permission to use.
So they can use it.
Yeah.
They just chose not to.
So I just don't, again, I don't get that. It was clearly an intentional decision, but it was just a little distracting. It's like, why not reference the character?
I guess because, who knows? I don't know. I can't explain that. It'll remain a mystery to all those that read.
Yeah. So, again, good story, good art. If I were looking to add stuff, this certainly would be a potential. It's, you know, classic sci-fi stuff and one of the earlier properties from sci-fi.
Yeah, I agree. And one other thing I got to say, they've been using, his name's Lucio or Perillo or Perillo. I don't know how you say it. I don't know if he's Italian or Spanish artist, but he's been doing the cover art for these books, and it's just amazing. He is an amazing cover artist.
Yeah, the covers are nice.
Yeah, I was just like, so every time he's on a cover over at Dynamite and they're all pretty much the same price, I get his covers just because whatever he's doing, it's knocking it out of the park. Him and every now and then they'll do an art germ.
Well, and the interior art's solid too. It's almost got a bit of an Alan Davis sort of a feel to it.
I would agree with you there. Alan Davis, for sure.
It's nice, clean style, tells the story well. It's nice art to look at.
Yeah, so if you're into the character, this is actually a good book to read. It's just, you got to be into the character and have room on your pull list.
Yep.
It wouldn't knock things off.
Yeah, I think if you're into this kind of stuff, definitely check it out, see if it's for you. I think it's well executed, and it's a good story, so odds are if you're into the stuff, you might want to pick it up.
Exactly.
For me, I went with a solid B on this. I thought it was really good stuff. Did get a little frustrated by the ending of each issue, kind of a, oh, and here's the threat for next time kind of a thing. But storytelling these days, what you going to do? It's not a flaw. It's just a technique I think is a little overused.
It's just what happens now, it seems like.
Yeah, exactly. It's standard fare, so it's not like I'm knocking points off for it, but it's like, come on.
Well, you want to know what? Originally, I was going to give it a B, and then I was toying around with a B plus and a B, and I'm going to give it the B plus back. The reason why I was going down to the B is because, you know, the gravity thing and they shouldn't be super powered. But, you know, when you go with the Kryptonian aspect, I'm going to go ahead and give it the B plus. I like Dan Abnett. He's a great writer. Every time he writes a book, I'm on board. And if you're into Deja Thoris or the John Carter, you know, realm of books, I think this is one of the better ones that Dynamite's done in the recent history. So it's a good one to pick up.
Yeah, certainly if I were into the John Carter stuff, I would be getting this.
Yeah, and I am, so yeah, this is a book for me.
I can understand that.
Yeah. So, one thing I wanted to ask you, you've been reading stuff. Are you all caught up on your things?
I am current on my reading, other than, again, that one Crisis on Infinite Earths giant that I'm holding off for the second issue. Everything else I'm current on.
Okay, you're waiting to just binge that all at one time.
Yeah, both issues of that, and which they're going to do a hardcover of. It's like, you know, if I'd known they were going to do the hardcover, I might have just waited for the hardcover, but whatever.
Like, son of a gun. Now you have to double dip, maybe. No.
Depends what I think of the two things. I'll try to read them before I have to decide on the hardcover.
Yeah, that's tough.
But other than that, yeah, I'm current.
Yeah. And then you were telling me, if I'm not mistaken, this is my 100th episode, right?
That is correct. You started with 551.
551. So that's pretty cool. Now, 100 episodes.
100 episodes of the Weekly Comic Spotlight. You've also done the Yearly Comic Spotlight, the Decade in Review, or, you know, I'm trying to think what else.
A Back Issue Spotlight.
Back Issue Spotlight and stuff. So, yeah, you've done more than 100 episodes.
Yeah, but the 100 episodes of the Weekly Comic Spotlight, and it was kind of cool because I started checking when you told me this was going to be my 100th episode, and I saw I had an email from you, a direct message. I had signed up on the forums, and I remember, you know, we used to post on the forums because we didn't have a Slack channel back in the day, and, you know, post there, here and there, and you sent me a private message on the, and you were asking me if I would be interested in doing this. And then we set up a chat for later on. I still have those all saved. It was kind of cool. And I still remember my first review on February 28th, I think it came out. It was like The Terrifics, because it was the new age of DC heroes. Mm-hmm. Peter Parker, Spectacular Spider-Man, and a G.I. Joe versus the $6 Million Man. Those were the first books I reviewed, I remember.
It's sad, because I think The Terrifics is the only one still going on.
Yeah! With the state of affairs at 100 episodes of the Weekly Comic, which is just shy of 2 years of that stuff, because technically at 104 it'd be 2 years. I'm like, all the books are gone except for The Terrifics.
You'd be surprised how often that happens.
That's kind of, yeah, that's really depressing. But, you know, like, it's been really cool, because, like, we reviewed a lot of cool stuff, and you've got me to read things that I would have never read. I read more now than I ever did used to. Like, I even wrote down some of the stuff, like when you would go on vacation or I go on vacation, reading the Panel Syndicate stuff. I mean, a reading of the like Glacier City, Black Hand, Ironhead. Those were two from the Panel Syndicate. Reading, you know, Port of Earth, Star Trek, Oblivion Song. You know, when that was the first time that I saw a Kirkman thing came out forever. That was a number one. I mean, we just had a lot of cool stuff that came out over the time. And you even got me on the Amazon-only Elephant Men. I remember that. That was a new thing you got me reading. Mm-hmm.
Well, and you've gotten me on a number of things, too, and gotten me to read a number of stuff I wouldn't have otherwise. I mean, just this year alone, and we're only a few weeks in, stuff that we've reviewed that wasn't on my regular reading list. Harley Quinn, Aquaman, Tarot, Star, Atlantis Attacks, Thor, Undiscovered Country, Deja Torres. And not all of those are getting on my list, but actually all of those Marvel ones, depending if I go with Atlantis Attacks.
So even though we've trimmed our list, we still read a lot just because we're open to reading things, which is kind of cool that we do that.
I think you have to in comics, because if you only go with the stuff that you know is good, there's going to be stuff that is good that you miss out on.
Yeah, you very know? True. And you know what? I can't believe that since I've been recording, The Walking Dead has ended. That still shocks me.
Mm-hmm.
It still surprised me.
I still think that was premature. I think there was more stories to be had there. But hey, if he was done with it, it's over, you know?
Yeah, and what was funny is you and I reviewed Walking Dead number 192, and I gave it an A+, and I can't remember if you gave an A+, but I think you did. And then 193 was the end, and we were like, man, if we would have known that. But I mean, nobody knew it. They were still soliciting like 195 and 196, I think. Well, and then they just kind of disappeared.
And I applaud the surprise ending aspect.
Yeah, that was really cool.
You know, I'll give Kirkman a lot of credit for, I mean, what could be considered just a shenanigan, I think he's doing for the right reasons.
I agree.
So I'm curious if he's going to be able to kind of fill the void of both The Walking Dead and really Invincible in terms of some stuff that was reasonably well-known and long-lasting.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen so much change over those last 100 episodes. I'm just really happy to be here. And my wife and I, we listened to my first few recordings, and she would tell me, oh my gosh, you sound really nervous. And now she's like, oh, you sound like you're not nervous at all. And I'm like, no, that's because I'm not. We get along, and we're just chit-chatting now. But I remember that first episode, I was so nervous. I was probably like, oh. I had no idea how many people are listening to this thing.
It takes a while to get used to doing a podcast, to get comfortable hearing your own voice, or at least accept hearing your own voice.
Yeah.
And trying to figure out what to say.
Very much. It's really kind of hard to do a review the way you do it and the way that I do it now, where you're talking about a book, but doing it in a way where you don't spoil it. So you're kind of talking around the plot points or trying to without, you know, giving too much away. So that's a difficult thing to do. And it's almost like an artful, you know, dance that you got to do.
I agree. It is challenging because there are times it's like, you know, sometimes you almost have to. It's like, well, you know, the thing's ending, or here's the thing, you know, whatever. You can't not talk about it, but I don't want these episodes to replace the reading experience.
I agree.
There have been a couple of podcasts I've listened to in past years where they're going through like one issue in such detail of not only what's going on, but how they felt about it. And great podcasts, but to the point where you don't really feel the need to go read the issue yourself.
Yeah. I actually remember the reason why the Comic Book Page became my favorite podcast for reviews and stuff like that was I would listen to what you guys were saying and I would hear the scores. But at the time, I was a monthly shipper from DCBS. And before that, you know, local comic shop, I pick it up. But when I would get the monthly shipments, your recordings would come out 4 weeks ahead of time before I got my books.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would start reading the books and I still didn't know what happened. I just knew a score. And so that was kind of cool, where if I listen to a different podcast and they tell you everything that happened, I'd be like, oh yeah, I remember what's going to happen here. It really does take something away from it and from the reader experience. So it's kind of cool that listening here, you don't get that.
Well, and that's part of why we time the releases when we do, because like the stuff we just talked about is stuff that came out on January 22nd. We're recording this about a week after that. It's going to go up almost another week after this. So it'll go out on, what, February 3rd.
Yep.
So not quite 2 weeks after, but close enough that people have had a chance to read the stuff if they want to. We tell people a week in advance what we're going to be reviewing, so there's no surprises there. And again, we're trying to get people excited about comics and trying to help with that matchmaking, find the right comics for each person, and it's going to be different for each person.
I agree. Different for everyone.
You know, but the exact reasons we may love something, somebody may say, oh, not for me, or the reasons we don't like something, they're like, you know what, but I will. That's awesome.
Yeah, very awesome. And, you know, I appreciate that you introduced me to a lot of stuff. I'm glad that I have been able to introduce you to stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, new publishers have come out. You know, we both got to experience TKO, the first and second wave. But I think the most important thing over the last 100 episodes, I've become more engaged with the comic book forum and the Slack channel and the community. So I feel like I've made friends, even though there's a lot of people I haven't really met in real life. And it was kind of cool because, like, you and I have formed a bond, even though we've never met.
Yeah.
I mean, with everything that happened, you know, with your family last year, it's just amazing. I felt like we went through that together, and yet we've never met. And it's odd.
No, believe me, that was something that was really important to me, knowing that I had you, the other co-hosts, and all the listeners just as a support network and stuff, particularly for those 9 days or whatever in Glasgow last year.
Yeah.
And it's interesting how much of a friendship you can do, again, like you said, never having met face to face.
Yeah, it really has. So, I mean, you've really become a friend of mine. So that's probably the biggest impact over the last 100 episodes. I'm glad you picked me because I feel like I have a new friend and we get along great. We have fun doing this. I mean, we put a lot of work into it. It takes more time and effort than I ever thought it would. And it's even double for you, triple because you're doing so many of the podcasts. But it's, you know, it's kind of cool. We have a friendship and we have a hobby that we love, and hopefully everyone out there is enjoying it.
Yeah, well, and it's been a blast doing these episodes with you and stuff, because I appreciate your willingness to dive into pretty much any comic with an open mind and come at it with a positive attitude and look for what's good at it, even if in one or two cases, maybe there wasn't a whole lot to find.
Yeah, it's true. I'll never forget when I was completely lost when you were introducing me to the Power Rangers. And it's like, you're like, this is the Crisis on Infinite Earths. And I'm like, what's a Zord? I have no idea what's going on.
Your willingness to come in at the tail end of a major crossover for the entire Power Rangers universe, knowing none of that, I definitely applaud and appreciate, particularly that you didn't just write it off of, I don't know what's going on, it sucks.
Yeah.
Because that would have been easy to do.
Yeah, I was looking at it, I was like, I can see it's written well, I just don't know what the heck is going on, really, because I just don't know how the characters work and what's going on. But it was fun, so I try to be open-minded at everything I do.
That, to me, is, I think, one of the hardest things for somebody reviewing anything, and particularly comics, to really come to grips with, is there's what you like and there's what's good.
Yes.
And I may love something, but admit, its execution isn't great.
Yeah, it's very true.
Entertaining, and I like it, but from a more objective point of view. And there are other things that the better it is, the more I may hate it.
Yeah, very true. Like, we reviewed Conan as one, and another one, we've reviewed a horror book with me, something like You Are or something, I can't remember
what it was
called.
You Are Obsolete.
You Are Obsolete, yeah. And both of those, I know you didn't like them, but you liked them because that's why you didn't like them, because they were written very well, because it's not something you're going to enjoy. So I think that's kind of cool that we both come together in that way, that we have different likes,
mm-hmm.
but we can read each other's things and point out, hey, it's not bad because of this and this and this, or it's great because of this and this and this, and just go from there.
Well, and also try to figure out, even if it's not for us, who might like it, because that way the listeners have a sense of, oh, I'm into that, maybe I should check it out, or nope, not for me.
Yeah, very true. Because I think there are things out there that people like, which I have no interest in, but it may be written very well, and I could probably review it.
Exactly, exactly.
Cool.
So, let's see. We're going to take a break from a regular format for the next couple of weeks. Normally, we do what we did this week of talk about a DC title, a Marvel title, and some other title, but for the next couple of weeks, I'm taking a little time off. So next week, we're going to come back and we're going to discuss what titles we're getting from DC. The following week, we're going to talk about what titles we're getting from Marvel. The week after that, the titles we're getting from all the other publishers. The week after that, we're going to go over a wave two of the TKO titles.
Yep.
And then finally, the week after that, which I think is probably March by that point, we'll be back to a regular format of a DC title, a Marvel title, and some other title.
Yeah, and we'll have some good stuff picked out. And we'll keep our eyes open over this February to see if there's anything in those previous weeks that are must-reads.
Yeah, if there's something that's just, oh my god, we have to discuss, we can always, you know, do either a back-issue spotlight or a special episode of the Weekly Comic Spotlight. We can figure something out.
Yeah, something fun.
It's the nice thing about being in total control of the content of the podcast. We can do what we want.
Exactly.
Now, I am going to go ahead and mention now that the previews for March is going to come out on February 25th. That's a little bit in advance, but hey, you know. So the deadline is going to be the morning of March 7th. We're back to our regular format of one clip per pick. We've already closed the submission window for February. We had fewer people submit for February because it was kind of I recommend whatever, and an abbreviated time frame to do that in. But we had enough recording between the clips and stuff that I actually split that into two episodes.
Holy mackerel. How long was it?
Well, it was about hour and 15 minutes worth of clips from you and the others. And then I started recording when I realized I'd gone for about an hour and 15 minutes. I'm like, well, I could either do this as about a 2.5 hour episode, or I could just take mine and do that as a second episode. And that's what I did.
My man, John, with an hour and 15. Way to go.
It's like, hey, we can recommend whatever. So I actually went through, you know, my inventory and tried to find stuff that I think are kind of hidden gems of the past that are worth checking out.
That's really cool.
So hopefully people enjoy it and stuff. I thought all the clips you and the others sent in had some great stuff in it. So hopefully this will help some people the next time they're either at a convention looking at trade collections or back issue bins, or just at their local store and stuff.
Cool.
So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
That pretty much does it until we're live in March.
Sounds good. Cool. Join us next time as we take a step back and take a look at the DC titles we're getting, why we're getting them, and just what we think about DC these days.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.